Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Jack's Guardians going for 11 straight tonight?
Yeah, 100%.
Not taking down the Astros, no?
No, okay. Chance.
Okay. We're probably on the same page there. I don't think so either. That should be fun. One of these days, they're going to beat, you know, this is going to be the team they beat. Like, a top of their division. I mean, they played like four of them in a row. But hey, they're going to win against a team that's top of the division. Like, this would be the one where they take the series and then go on like a sweep of, I think they play the White Sox, right? They play the White Sox right before, I think, going into the break. Or they play them right out of the break? I think it's before. But they're going to basically take on the White Sox, sweep them, and be like, guys, going to the break, 3 games under .500, 4 games under .500. We happy? Come on. I mean, hey, what more did you want? We told you this team was going to turn it around. And they play a bunch of stank teams coming out of the break. And it's going to be like, told you, we were just right around the corner. We were in a rough stretch. It's like, no, you're just beating really bad teams and losing to good teams. And that's just a pinnacle of a .500 baseball team at best. It'll be fun. It'll be a great time.
I'm almost nervous to watch tonight. I've been thinking about it, and I'm like, how much worse can they really get?
See, I don't even, there's not even nerves attached to it for me, because I'm ready for them to be like, oh, this is going to be terrible. Like, all nerves go out the window after yesterday's loss, where it's like, there's no way they give up one hit and lose. And Bo just decides not to drop down and block a ball, doesn't get his glove to it, and right. They just let somebody walk home.
It's literally just embarrassing. I'm like, I can't believe this is my team right now.
Yeah, they just find a new way to lose every single night. It's something different. Although, the only thing that you can stay consistent on is that the offense is never going to show up. So, this is going to be fun. We got more Guardians to listen to, though, because we're going to get to here the most pressing things said by our station's guests today with the station buzz. All right, let's kick things off. We heard from Anthony Kastrovitz of MLB.com earlier today. Let's hear from him once again on with Nick and JP on Afternoon Drive. Who are you open to trading? Who are you not open to trading if you're the Guardians at the deadline?
There is an argument to take advantage of this market, which is there's a lot of contending teams. There's kind of a middling, the guys who are pending free agents on bad teams, and there's just not a lot to work with. And I do think the Guardians, barring some major surge, which their schedule does lighten up, so there is that possibility, I guess. But, you know, I think what you see is what you get. I mean, it doesn't look like a team that's built to win a championship. So there is an argument to take advantage of that market. But I do think Emmanuel Clase, I would take a good hard look at that. He's signed through next year, I believe. There are, you know, team options attached to that. I think he still has a lot of trade value, so I would be keen on exploring that. That would not be the case with Stephen Kwan for me, and I'd be surprised if it was the case for them, too.
If anybody right now is opposed to trading away Clase, I'm sorry, I don't understand your argument. I don't understand your side of it at all. Guys, we've watched them play baseball. Like, Clase, the one leverage moment that he's really had to pitch in the last 2 weeks was yesterday. And he, quote-unquote, blew it, but not really. I mean, he hit a batter that somehow made his way around and then scored from third from a non-blocked ball. Like, Clase is not really serving that massive of a role here. You don't need one of the best closers in baseball if you don't have a need to be rolling out a closer. You got to fix that issue first. And we've talked about it. Cade Smith can fill in that role just fine. I mean, I don't even know that I'd be shying away from listening to things on Stephen Kwan. It all determines, it's determined by the fact of how your talks are going about contract extensions. Because if Kwan's sitting there going, guys, if this team doesn't show up, they don't do anything, I'm not coming back. You might want to consider then moving on from Kwan, because he still has a boatload of value that you can get stuff back from. But if you think you can get him back here on a long-term deal, yeah, absolutely. No, nobody's touching Kwan. But That's only one thing the Guardians will know. The one thing that I think you can't have happen is be like, Kwan is untouchable. Then we get to the offseason. It's like, Stephen Kwan's exploring options to go elsewhere and looking to not be a part of the Guardians anymore. Like, okay, so you let him walk for nothing because you can't pay the money to keep him here. Hey, then you probably should have just dealt him. That's going to be the reality. But you're going to try to hold him here while the offense doesn't perform. And, well, then we get thrown back into the same fun that we've been having. Chris Ostenheimer of the Chronicle Telegram on with Baskin and Phelps today. He talked about a reality where, hey, maybe Kwan doesn't really want to come back.
They have to improve this offense. It can't just be Jose and Kwan. And Kwan, I mean, what he's, I'm not saying he is, but, I mean, I don't think he's anxious to sign on long-term with this club if this is what he's going to see while he's here.
And why should he be? Why? What real reason, if you're Kwan, are you just elated to be here other than, hey, the team every once in a while is pretty competitive. Like, they stay in the mix throughout, you know, if I sign a five-year deal, there's a good chance that in, like, three of those years we'll go to the playoffs. That's great. You could also, you know, probably sign a deal with, like, the Dodgers that are going to pay you double the amount of money and you're going to go to the playoffs every year. That probably sounds a little bit more appealing. But if I'm Stephen Kwan right now, I'm paying very close attention to the deadline, right? If I'm saying, hey, it's up in the air, you know, I'm not saying trade me, but I'm going to be looking to see what you do. And the Guardians just go through and say, all right, well, we're not going to do anything to add to even the future of this offense, like make a deal for a guy who might not be on an expiring contract, get somebody who is either fresh in the MLB or ready to come up in the MLB with a lot of promise. Like, listen, we're trying to add to it. We're trying to get guys. We're going to, you know, pan out here in trying to give you something to work with in the next couple of years. You might be able to convince him to stay. But if you're just like, ah, unload Santana, unload Thomas. We got a couple of 21-year-olds back that'll be here in 2027. No, that's not good enough for me. If I'm Kwan, I'm walking out the door. And rightfully so. The way that we talk about, you know, if Jose really wanted to leave, would you blame him? It's kind of the same conversation with Stephen Kwan. He didn't take the hometown discount yet, but nobody's holding, you know, him to taking a hometown discount. He doesn't have to. And that's the reality you're going to look at. Either build a competitive team around him, make him want to stay, or more than likely he's probably going to get up and walk out. You can't just expect people to sign here on the cheap. Keep the Guardians conversation going. Matt Derry of the Guardian Brothers Guardians cast. Excuse me, the Derry Brothers Guardians cast. Yeah, it's one combination of those four words. He was on earlier today with Ken and Anthony and it talked about really just in underemphasized, just undervalue that is on this team. A player who has just been doggone awful.
The black hole at the catching position right now that is really hurting them and then hurt them defensively yesterday. You have got to block that ball. If Bo Naylor's calling for a low splitter from Class A, you got to know it's coming in on a 1-2 pitch low in the dirt, and you block it, and then you go with something up in the zone on 2-2. You have to block that ball. You know, I hate to pick on just one guy here, but Bo Naylor's been brutal, and I know his defensive run saved is up the last few weeks from where it was, but it's still 24th or whatever in the league. It's not good enough, and that yesterday was kind of the Bo Naylor game. I mean, it was bad.
I mean, we talk so, like, highly of Bo when he was in the minor league system. Obviously, like, Josh is on the team. That played a little bit into it. But you can't think for a second that if the Guardians had another catching prospect that was actually, you know, worth anything, no offense to Dom Nunez, but kind of offense to Dom Nunez. But if they had another catching prospect that was worth anything, Bo would have surely been right back down in AAA. Guys, he's been horrible. Like, defensively, he's been okay. He's not very good at blocking. I mean, you heard Matt say it there. He's 24th in defensive runs saved. So he's a bottom-of-the-league catcher defensively, and he's horrible offensively. Like, the nine homers have been a nice little touch that he had earlier on in the year, but he doesn't bring anything with the bat, which is where he was supposed to be strong. Like, you saw him in the minors rake beyond belief. And he got better defensively, but the offense just completely tailored off. There is nothing there in terms of value at the plate. And if you're not going to bring it to me defensively, well, then you're just one of the bottom catchers in Major League Baseball. And I think that's the way that the rest of the league views him. And we're still like, ah, well, maybe he's going to shape up into something. Yeah, probably if he got the opportunity to go back to AAA and work on it. But just not tonight. And Guardians getting ready to first pitch against the Astros. They flash the lineup in front of us on the screen right now. Nothing like ending it off with Will Wilson, Bo Naylor, Brian Rocchio. That surely won't be three outs three separate times this game. Maybe a team that can bring us more happiness, but unlikely. The Cleveland Browns, Joe DeLeon of A to Z Sports on with Nick and JP today. He talked about the direction of the team heading into 2025.
If you go with Kenny Pickett, you're really limiting a lot of things and what the ceiling is for this team. I think defensively, they're going to be super stout. I think that Mason Graham, as we talked right after the draft, he's going to slide right in super nicely alongside Myles Garrett. And I think that they're going to be so disruptive on their D-line. I think their whole defense is going to be impossible to move the ball against. If you can get satisfactory play out of, if it's Flacco, if it's Kenny Pickett, or eventually it's Shedeur Sanders, you could surprise people in the NFL. You could surprise teams in the NFL. But I think more likely than not, they probably will be picking in the top 10 again, as disappointing as that is, just because that there's so many teams in the division and in the AFC that are just a lot more further along than where the Browns are at this current moment.
Yeah, I mean, the Browns are playing from behind to start the year. We all know that. There's not really a ton here. You're going to lean on the defense. That's basically all it's going to come down to. You're going to lean on the defense and hope you get a just okay play out of the offense at the end of the day. And that's going to be a recipe to hopefully success. But the direction of where the team is heading is they're heading for a bounce back season for a bad team, which isn't bounce back, they're going to get back to the playoffs. That's bounce back, get the hell out of the gutter, right? Get out of the basement of the league, and that'll be considered your bounce back. It's just not a ton of hope and optimism. You're just staring at the quarterback position and ultimately kind of hoping for the best with this team, and that's where it gets cut off. Scott Petrak, BrownZone.com, on today with Baskin and Phelps to close things out here. He talked about rookie running back Quinshon Judkins and the role he'll play on the offense.
I think the system is great for him. I think the expected commitment to the run game is great for him. Going back to some of the wide zone should fit, you know, the linemen. I mean, we know they all complained about it last year, not pulling like they used to and not running that. I think it could energize Joe Batonio and Wyatt Teller and Ethan Posick again and even Jack Conklin. So I think a lot comes into play that gives Judkins a chance to be really successful early, not to mention just his talent and his physical ability. You know, I think he's built for the position. We saw what he did at Mississippi and Ohio State. So, yeah, I think he's going to be a key piece of this offense, no doubt.
Yeah, I think Quinshon's got a chance to be, I mean, one of the most impactful pieces on the team. Like, you talk about this team going to be going heavier into the run game. I think that's a massive part, sort of leaning on Quinshon in that regard. Something we might touch on later today, maybe we'll touch on a different day this week. PFF came out with their offensive line rankings, which Scott touched on, and just this team sort of bouncing back. PFF has you ranked as the 27th best offensive line heading into this year. That, to me, is pure blasphemy. I don't understand that in the slightest. Like, did we not realize that they completely switched schemes and they're going back to the old one where they were really good? Yes, they're old. I'm not saying they should be fifth, but probably not 27th either. I think that kind of determines a lot of where you're going. If you're in the boat right now of just, is this run game going to be better? How much of an impact can Quinshon have? It goes as far as your offensive line goes, more likely than not, which I think will be a surprising positive compared to what it was last year. All right, that'll do it for the station buzz. When we come on back here in about 5 minutes, a conversation that absolutely nobody wants to think about, but I think one that's realistic about having when we talk quarterbacks in a bleak scenario that could play out for the Browns coming up in 2025. I'll explain what I mean here coming up at 8:20 on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan. The countdown to Browns training camp and the preseason is on as the quarterback competition takes center stage. And the NBA offseason is here, so the Cavs could make a move at any moment. Don't miss a minute of The Fan with the latest breaking news during your workday or on the go. Stream us at 923thefan.com or on your phone with the free Odyssey app. Jake Vonnegut with you guys here on Overtime on The Fan. We got plenty of Browns coming your way. Get a grip as well at 9 o'clock. But listen, it's a conversation that nobody's going to want to have, But I think it plays a realistic possibility of playing out, right? And you're going to have to let me set the scene for a second of basically the scenario that goes down if this were to in any way come about and be true. Right, so we've talked about the potential of the Browns rolling in with the quarterback situation for quarterbacks. This scenario is probably going to need it to play out that there's only three quarterbacks on this roster. Whether that's you take Kenny Pickett into the season and then trade him after a couple of weeks, or you just cut ties with either Kenny or Joe at some point. But you're rolling with three quarterbacks, or you're rolling with two and you already cycle through two of them, whatever has to play out. But if you get to a point where, let's say Joe's playing, and maybe Joe's not playing that great, or Joe ends up going down but has his team in a semi-competitive spot, and you're forced to turn to another quarterback, let's say somewhere in the range of October to November, I think that you're looking at a team right now that does have the possibility where if they make the assessment, they say, which this isn't that far off, knowing that they were drafted in the third and the fifth round. Hey, Dillon Gabriel's probably not that ready to take over and have this team and have them playing competitive at the spot that they are right now. Or the same case with Shedeur Sanders and going, all right, where do we turn to for the quarterback that's going to leave us in the most competitive spot? Again, let's pretend that Joe was playing and Joe goes down with an injury. Kenny was playing, Kenny goes down with the injury, and the other one's not there. And they've made that assessment on the two rookies. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility for the Browns to take a look inside the room and go,
at Maurice's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Maurice's.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcast.
You know, it's October, November. Deshaun Watson might legitimately give me the best chance to win football games. And actually turn to Deshaun. It's not something that I hope for. It's not what I want. I've seen the Deshaun experiment sort of come by and pass you by, and I've seen enough of it. I do legitimately think there's a chance that if they were in a competitive spot and ran out of a veteran quarterback, that instead of reaching to the pool of saying, let's try to find Joe Flacco 2.0, who's out there that can lead this team because the rookies aren't ready, that they might just go, well, we're already paying him 200 and something. How bad could it be?
I think there's a 0% chance that happens because of what Jimmy Haslam said.
Okay, so I would initially...
big swing and a miss.
I would initially say that too. Is it not still a big swing and a miss even if he plays? Like, you still paid him $230 million.
I don't see him getting on a NFL field for the Browns again because of that statement. I don't think he wants to be on the Browns. He may like post all these pictures with all his Browns. I don't think he wants it anymore after hearing what Jimmy Haslam said.
I think you're in a spot right now. And again, it's a valid point. Like, if I was Deshaun, I mean, I brought up to Daryl last week, I was like, what reason does Deshaun have to be a good teammate? Because we have the thing with him putting Shedeur under his wing and helping him along and being a good teammate, being in team meetings. It's like, why would Deshaun even want to do that? And, you know, Daryl threw out, like, it's basically to try to prove to other teams, like, hey, I'd still be available after this, which, again, completely valid. I just think I can't take anything that Jimmy says, anything that Kevin says, Andrew Berry says, and take it as gospel and believe it to be just completely true 100% of the way, and to read into it as the statement is, as the statement says. Because if you do that, you would have been just absolutely flabbergasted and baffled at half of the moves they made over the past 4 years.
I mean, I get it's a dysfunctional franchise, but I seriously see no way possible from either side that Deshaun wants to get back on the field for the Browns and that Jimmy Haslam and whoever else is making those decisions wants Deshaun to be back on the field.
I don't think this is a sort of situation of want, though. Like, again, if you have one veteran quarterback, your two rookies aren't ready, and that guy goes down, I think there is a legitimate chance that if you don't think the rookies are ready, like, Deshaun does probably give you the best chance to win. Even that he's not great, and we've, again, seen it, he's nowhere near worth the $230 million. There's a good chance he'd still be better than Shador, better than Dylan, if they're looking to still be competitive.
At this point, I think they'd be more happy with sucking than putting him back on the field. And I think the fans would be, too.
I think the fans 100% would be. I don't know that Andrew Berry's job security and Kevin Stefanski's job security would mirror.
I think Jimmy Haslam understands, though. Like, he admitted that how big of a... Like, I don't think he's going to blame either of them if they turn to Deshaun Watson and say, like, your guys are fired for... Like, I don't think that's going to happen.
So, listen, if that's the route I want to go down, I want to sit here and I want to believe what Jimmy says. Also, wouldn't it be surprising to me if they go down, they win four games this year, and Jimmy goes, all right, out the door. Like, new coach, new GM, you won seven games over the last two seasons. How do I warrant keeping that around?
As a matter of fact, I think if Andrew Berry or Kevin Stefanski decided to put Deshaun on the field, that's when Jimmy Haslam would fire them right then and there and be like, did you guys not hear what I said in the offseason about a swinging, like, what are you guys doing? I think that would make him want to fire them more than them having a bad season.
And now it would have to be an organizational decision. Like, this is going to have to be a decision that would come from all three. Again, I see Jimmy saying swing and a miss. That leads me to think more likely than not. Yes, Jimmy is probably against the idea of actually bringing Deshaun back. I just don't think that's gospel. You can have a swing and a miss and still play a guy. Like, if I paid right now... I mean, if I offered a max contract to Jared Allen and he continued to play the way that he was, I'm not saying you'd ever do that. God, please don't do that. But if you offered a max contract to Jared Allen, he played out and played the way that he is right now, you can still look at it and say he's a swing and a miss without saying he's an unplayable basketball player. Now, the contract's going to basically make him unplayable and you want to move off of him. But if you can't move off of him, it's not like you're just going to be like, sit over on the bench.
So like Jordan Poole.
Yeah. You still play Jordan Poole, though, do you not? Like, the Wizards still went through
Except
and played Jordan Poole.
Jordan Poole doesn't come with all the baggage that Deshaun Watson
has. Correct. That's obviously something that plays into the equation. But, I mean, since Deshaun has been here, he's been, as far as we know, clean off the field, right? Like, he hasn't run into any problems other than being snappy with the media since he's been in Cleveland. Like, he hasn't done anything other than be an atrocious quarterback to make you not like him in Cleveland. Again, prior to Cleveland, not making that argument, okay? Like, there's plenty there. But since he's been in Cleveland, he hasn't done anything to make you hate him more other than be snappy when he's answering questions and be a terrible quarterback that's eating up $230 million. That's all it is. So I think you can be a swing and a miss without just being like, I can't let you go on the field. I think it's more likely than not they don't let him on the field. But I think if they were facing a situation like, let's play out the schedule we're not going to play like the schedule game here, but let me just pick a point in the schedule where, let's say, Deshaun is actually healthy. By the time you roll around to like November 9th, you're playing the Jets, right? So you would have went through your tough 6-game stretch and then you would have played the Dolphins and you would have played the Patriots. Let's say somehow by miracle, Joe plays well, defense looks great. You go 3-3 through the tough stretch and you take, even if you split the next two games, you're 4-4. And Joe goes down, and you look, and you go, well, Dylan Gabriel's a backup, and Shador hasn't progressed the way we wanted to. And Deshaun's sitting there healthy and ready to roll, and you're 4-4, and you want to be competitive. If you don't think Dylan or Shador gives you a chance, and Kenny Pickett's off in some other world, I think this team would take a serious consideration at reaching down and saying, all right, it'll bring Deshaun back. Because he's going to be better on the field. He's here. We're paying him. He hasn't necessarily done anything wrong. Even if he goes out and sucks, I've evaluated that it's a swing and a miss. I said that it's not going to work. Like, that this contract is going to be a failure. I've acknowledged that. I'm still having him on my roster for the next, essentially, year and a half, 2 years. Like, I have to pay him one way or another, and he has to be in Cleveland while I do it. I don't have that opportunity to cut him. So I can either let him rot away on the bench and be a good teammate, or if an opportunity presents itself where he gives the team the best chance to win, which we heard Kevin Stefanski say how many times last year, Deshaun gives us the best chance to win. Deshaun gives us the best chance to win over and over again until he was hurt. I just don't think it's that far out of the realm of possibility to say, okay, well, just step in and try to finish out the season. Even if it doesn't work, like, there might be a chance we turn to the rookies later, but if Deshaun can keep you afloat and he can run the offense, I think if you're allowing him to basically just be a part of the team, prove that he's a good teammate, and you didn't exile him to Serbia, that you could probably just come to a conclusion where, like, yeah, I mean, if you're letting him input on your rookie quarterbacks, you're letting him help out, you'd probably turn the keys over to him in a dire situation. Again, I don't think it's Shador looks ready, but why don't we give Deshaun one more chance before we do? Like, maybe this will still work out. I don't think that's in their mind now. I think they've completely separated the idea, the $230 million to where Deshaun is now. Where Deshaun is now is he's going to rehab, and he is a option at quarterback that they understand the fan base does not like. So far, the play that they have seen, I'm sure they have not liked. But he's still a quarterback in your room. You're still rostering him. Like, when he's healthy, if at any point you activate him this season, he eats up a roster spot. He has to be on the 53-man if he's healthy, and you don't just basically throw him on IR for the entire year, which I think is a real chance, because I think that's a hard sell to people. Like, after they've thrown out the timelines, like, hey, October, November, like, that's around when Deshaun could be back, it's really hard to look at it and say, well, we're just going to keep him on IR. I know how many fans want that to happen. I wouldn't be mad if it happened, for crying out loud. But when the timelines are out for you to do that, I think people look around and you go, yeah, well, I get it. But Deshaun's not going to be looking around being like, yeah, keep me on IR. No, I don't know how badly he wants to suit up for the Browns. He's got no problem wearing the gear. He's got no problem being in the meeting rooms, having positive stories spun about him. And truthfully, I mean, if he's helping Shador, which Mary Kay wrote last week, like, it's working. They're working together, and Shador is coming along quickly and ramping up the pace to try to get alongside Dylan in the mental game, in the mental aspect of football, and learning the playbook and everything else. He's clearly just still contributing. Which is why I'm asking you, 216-474-0092, would you consider playing Deshaun if you gave the team the best chance to win? I mean, if you get to a spot where it's him and the two rookies and he truthfully gives you the best chance to win, and you're in a spot that it makes sense to win, are you handing over to Deshaun? And because I think that's a tough battle for people of, here's what we've had and what we've seen, but if you're telling me the two rookies aren't working, you're still probably drafting a quarterback in 2026 in the first round. I'm not saying that it changes your plans and you're looking for Deshaun to be your savior. I'm saying you're basically viewing him at that point as a bridge quarterback. Try to make me competitive. Try to make the offense look competent. And I think there's a real chance that that would be the best sort of opportunity for the Browns to do it. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if everybody in that room looked around and said, yeah, Deshaun does truly give us the highest win percentage out of these three guys. I mean, listen, clearly the Browns weren't blown away by Shador's tape, or else they would have drafted him before the fifth round. I don't think anybody on planet Earth was blown away by Dylan Gabriel's tape, other than maybe his mother and a couple of coaches at Oregon. Those might have been the only people truly impressed with that tape. So I don't think it's that wild to think that, again, he hasn't been good, but the quarterback that was once there, there's a glimmer of that. There's a guy who can still play football at an acceptable level. I think they could convince themselves of that if it meant trying to win. And if it didn't work, if he still looked like old Deshaun, yeah, you're still going to get to the rookies. Again, I'm all for turn to the rookies early. After you get out of this six-game hell stretch, I don't care if the Browns are terrible. I think when you're going through and your best possible way out of this is probably playing bad football and probably getting a better draft pick and trying to restart this thing off a 1 to 2 year draft process, I think that's your fastest climb out. But I understand that's not how the world of football works. I understand that if you're Kevin Stefanski, that's not how keeping your job works. You want to win football games, and there's a good chance Deshaun might be the quarterback to do it. Again, 216-474-0092. Would you consider playing Deshaun if he gave the team the best chance to win at any point this season? And, I mean, we bring it up, But when would a Brown season actually turn to prioritizing winning? That's coming up in 5 minutes on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan. It's at 9 o'clock, as it always does. But we're throwing out the question right now. 216-474-0092. When does a Brown season truly begin to prioritize winning? And what I mean, so I think that we can all agree that out of the gate, it's going to prioritize winning. I think the Browns have showed that by the simple addition of going out and getting Joe and Kenny. And I mean, everything we've seen so far is that one of these guys is going to be the starter come week one, unless we are just blown away by one of the rookies or something miraculous happens. But I think right now, they have shown you out of the...
At Marisa's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Marisa's.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
They're going to try to win games. I wonder, though, like, when does that become a season philosophy? Right? Because at some point, I think all of us sort of expect, unless you think they're riding Joe Flacco to the promised land, is somebody expects that you're going to turn to the rookies at some point here. You're going to go to the young guys and you're going to see what they have, right? We've talked about it throughout the course of the offseason. I'm expecting it. But if you get to a place with either Joe or Kenny where you continue to win games and they continue to look at least in the mix, then you're going to have to say to yourself, hey, I don't know that we can go to the young guys here. Like, I don't know that we can toss away a season where maybe potentially we're looking at a playoff spot. But I do kind of wonder where that spot is. Right, like where you get off of the veteran quarterback, and even if it's you know, after the first six games, like if you come out and you're 0-6, it's time to turn it to the rookies.
Yeah.
season's chalked. You lost six of your first six, or you lost five of your first six. Season's probably done. If you're 1-5, fat chance you're turning it around. Okay, Bengals tried it last year. Didn't work so well. They were able to get up to 9 wins, still miss the playoffs. But I do think there's a world where, hey, if you come out even 2-4 and you give, you know, Joe or Kenny the leeway to start one or two more games, like I said, after you come out of that stretch and you play Pittsburgh in week six, you go up against the Dolphins, you go up against the Patriots, very quickly you find yourself back to 4-4. I don't know. You can't turn that over to the rookies, even going into a week against the Jets. You're not going to have that luxury. You're going to have to continue to try to ride out whatever veterans are currently in the seat. Again, assuming that you still kept it with him when he was 2-4.
Yeah, if you're around 500 at the bye week, which is week 9, I think that's when they make that, like, those keep trying to win. If they're even 2 games or 3 games under 500 by the bye week, that's when you put the rookies in and say, okay.
Yeah, because, I mean, what if you're... Well, if you were 2 games under, you'd be, that's after 8 weeks, so you'd be 3-5.
And I'm assuming the Steelers, the Ravens, and the Bengals are all going to have better records than us at that point, too. So you'd be last in the division, not really a chance for a wild card spot at that point. I think you go to the rookie. Either one.
I think this is where it becomes a tough sell. I think the beginning of the season is going to determine so much of what they're going to do. Because as soon as you, and I'm not saying that I believe that the Browns, I project them at like 7 wins very optimistically. I think that realistically, you look at this team, and in any combination, I would not be like blown out of the water surprised if they finished between 2 and 10 wins. Like, there is a real possibility for both. I think you're probably closer to deciding over towards 2 than you are to 10. But I just wouldn't be surprised by what they have. And it's because of this. If you survive the first 6 weeks, and again, you go 2 and 4. Like, I think even if you get to 3 and 5, this is where it becomes difficult. Because coming out of the bye week, because where does that get you? That gets you going into the Jets is where you go after the bye. So you would have, coming out of that bye, Jets-Ravens, which is very realistically a 50-50 split. Like, you could obviously take down the Jets. I think it's very hard to argue that you're going to beat the Ravens this year. But I think that if you're 3 and 5 at that spot, you could probably convince yourself that you could take down the Jets unless they are just world beaters. You also then roll into Raiders, 49ers, Titans, Bears. I don't know that I project any of those teams to be great. Like, I think the Raiders are going to be mediocre at best. Like, Geno Smith is not a great quarterback. They don't have any wide receiver options. The 49ers are just teetering on being an absolute rebuild of a team. And then the Titans are rookie quarterback. The Bears were bad last year. I expect them to be better this year. But I think that's where it becomes difficult. Because if you go 3 and 5 at the bye, which, by the way, I think was a very realistic like projection as to, it's kind of like the teeter spot. Of like, I could contend, I could sell out based on what's going on in the AFC North. I think there's a world where if you're Kevin Stefanski, which everything that we've seen him do other than, I don't know, the end of, or really the last 2 years, but especially last year, like they were clearly trying to lose games. But everything else has been pretty cut and dry. Like, Kevin has tried to win football games. Whether he's been successful at not aside, he's gone out there and tried to put you in a spot to win games. And it's clearly something that's going to matter to him this year with maybe the job not being as secure as it might be. I think if you lose a ton of games this year, you could easily see one of those guys out the door, if not both of them, in Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski. I think if you're 3 and 5 and you're looking forward to, I mean, I'm not saying they'd win this many games, but you're looking at, what, 5 out of the next 6 being sort of potentially winnable games, you might be able to convince yourself to keep going.
Aren't those the games where you want the rookies to be placed in, though, against those type of teams?
Personally, yeah, absolutely. I think if you're focused on winning,
2 and 6 or 3 and 5, I think you still want the rookies to get in just to see what you have.
2 and 6 is that you're dead. You're dead in the water. That's got
to
be dead.
Looking at it, I don't even see how they could get to 3 and 5 at that point. I don't know if they can even get to... I think they'll be 2 and 6. Because I think somehow week one, they're going to pull out a win against the Bengals. And then the only other game I think they could win on those first couple weeks is the Vikings game in London.
I mean, I'm not saying I think they're going 3 and 5. Again, I'm playing devil's advocate here on this.
Yeah, but 100%.
I could get you to 3 and 5. Like, you could beat the Bengals. You could beat the Vikings. You can beat the Steelers. You can beat the Patriots. Like, I just got you 4 what I would consider semi-winnable games. Like, I don't think they're going to win all 4 of those games. I don't think they're capable of winning all 4 of those games. But those are all games that individually, I could be like, the Bengals' defense is, it stank.
And it's the trash. Bengals.
Yeah.
Like, we play well against the Bengals. Last year, not so much. But every other year, they play the Bengals very well. They beat them like 70, 80% of the time.
Yeah, I mean, if you're competent on offense, you have good offense versus good defense, and at worst, bad offense versus bad defense. Like, that defense is not going to be good. There's not a single thing. If they get Trey Hendrickson and Shamar Stewart, they still suck. Like, they suck slightly less. They have 2 potentially good players on a defense that still sucks. Okay, like, I don't think you're beating the Ravens. Again, Ravens are 2-0 against you this year. I don't see a world where you ever beat them. Probably not beating the Packers. You're probably not beating the Lions. The Vikings are a complete wild card with J.J. McCarthy. The Steelers... well, I think they're going to be fine. We'll see what Aaron Rodgers has. Like, he has not been winning games in New York, even though he played relatively well last year. And I think that New York team was probably a very comparable roster to where Pittsburgh is right now. Like, a very good defense and just kind of like a, what are you kind of doing offense here? Like, yeah, good wide receiver. You have a decent run game, but what's happening? And then, okay, Dolphins, Patriots are not 2 teams that excite me in any way. Like, the Dolphins, I mean, hell, I don't know what the Dolphins are doing. If you have a Pro Bowler on your team, they just trade him away. I mean, Raheem Mostert literally tweeted about it. He's like, if you basically make an all-star and you play in Miami, expect to be traded after they traded Jonnu. Like, their roster, or their schedule is tough out of the gate. You could go 0-6 out of the first 6 weeks. Again, not surprised. You go 2-4. Like, I can get you there. I can get you to 3-5 by the time that you get to that break. And I think that's what makes it so dangerous, is if I'm turning over and I'm competing. I do think, like, coming up to that bye, I think we're in agreement. That's probably the point where you start to decide which way am I going to lean here. Because at that point, you're about halfway through the season. You've seen what you've had out of whatever veteran or whatever two veterans you decided to play at that point. And you're pushing forward, but you're looking at an easy part of your schedule. I think if the Browns truthfully see something, it's going to be very hard for them to go, let's give the third or the fifth round guy a real shot here. Let's make sure we really see what we have. Knowing that they have two picks in 2026, I think it's an atrocity to draft two quarterbacks and never see them play that year. I don't know what you're doing from a draft strategy standpoint if you do that, but I think if you want to win games, you kind of get there with it. You see what you're doing, and I think you see a world where they think they can compete, and I think that's the most dangerous thing for them, because if you decide, let's keep rolling with Joe, because maybe, you know, this year we can slip into the playoffs, I think that's a massive morale boost for your fan base. I think it's a massive morale boost for where this team is going. Like, to sell to the players that are here, yes, we're still committed to winning. We can still win football games. This is a quick turnaround. And I think you're looking at a schedule that makes it very possible. Like, that backstretch of the schedule, if you survive the beginning and you look okay, you get to a point where you're competitive. And, like, wrapping back to what we were talking about last segment, like, that's the point where if one of those guys went down, that's where Deshaun would probably step in. And that's not the conversation I want to have here, but, like, it's that exact point. If you're 3-5, in looking for a quarterback, do I want to see Shador play against the Jets? Or do I really think that I can make this happen with just okay quarterback play or just okay offensive football and let my defense carry me? If the defense shows they're that good and you can get to that spot, which I think by getting to 3-5, they would have to do. Like, no combination of Joe, Kenny, hell, if you started a rookie and they look good, nothing's getting you there without a strong defensive performance. But they're going to give you a chance. And I think when you walk up to that and you are 3-5, if I had to put my money on it, do they say, you know what, let's just see what we have in the rookies, or let's go and compete? I think the Browns would signal to you, let's go compete. I think if they think there's any world where they can do it, it's hard to argue against 2-6. Like, we're going to win essentially the rest of the games throughout the course of the year. Because you'd have to go, to make the playoffs at least like 10-7. Like, we're going to drop one game from here on out. With the Ravens still there, the Steelers there again, the Bengals still there. You still play games against the Bills. You play, the Bears could be a good team. Who knows where they'll be at with Ben Johnson. Like, hey, that's a very tough sell. If you're 3-5 and you say, yeah, we got to be good from here on out. You know, we can't just throw away games. But if we, rattle off and can get to 10 and possibly slip into a playoff spot, or even if we don't and we just reinstall that this can be a winning football team, I think they're shooting for that every single time, knowing that they have a failsafe. Like, the Jaguars probably aren't going to be good. You're going to have a high draft pick, or at the very least, you have two first rounders that you can try to position and just work your way back into the first round and try to get to a spot to draft a quarterback. I think that's the brilliancy of having those two first round picks, is that you can go for it and then just hope the Jaguars suck. Like, you have that open to you. And I think if the Browns are presented with it, hey, they're going for broke rather than just punting on the season. I think they're going to do that every time because of the narrative that was spun on this team and how down the morale was last year. 216-474-0092. For you, at what point does a Brown season fully transition to, hey, we're going to try to compete? I would say 3-5 at the deadline. I think Jax leans a little bit more in probably the 4-4 camp of trying to win at least one more game and be competitive.
Yeah.
I really think that they would lean into it, even at 3-5. I think they would go for it, and I think there's a really good chance.
You're probably right, but at 3-5, I'm already like, I'm just picturing our division as a whole. Like, we're going to be so far behind.
You can get three teams from the AFC North in. And listen, I don't want to chalk the Steelers up to, like, just going out. They have the most, like, 50-50 start to the season of, like, this could go really bad or really poor. They could just be 500 by the time that they roll up to week 9. You can get three teams from the AFC North in. That's very doable. The Bengals are a coin flip. The Steelers are a coin flip. They could both land on heads. They could both be good. They also could be, tails, which you know where the tail lies. All right, coming back here in about 5 minutes, we'll get to Get a Grip on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.